You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Today we are very happy to welcome Nikolai de Matos Frisvold, author of Seven Crossroads of Night, Quimbanda in Theory and Practice. In this episode, Nikolai and I go over many of the core concepts and practices found within this tradition, as well as the influences of other African diasporic religions. We explore some areas which may seem familiar to practitioners of Western esotericism, specifically those who work with the infamous Grimorium Verum, and uncover the themes which express themselves through this vibrant living cult which thrives throughout Brazil and South America. I am your host, Matt Hadfield, and it is with great pleasure that I welcome Nikolai to the Hadean Press podcast. Welcome, Nikolai. Thank you for coming on and taking the time to discuss your latest book, Seven Crossroads of Night, Quimbanda in Theory and Practice. I'm really happy to have you on the podcast.
Thank you. Very happy that you invited me.
For our listeners that aren't familiar with you or your work, could you explain something of your background and how you became involved in the subject of magic and the occult?
You know, when you grow up and it's a sensitive child for energies and you are seeing things that you're not supposed to be, the imaginary friends, I think these kind of people that are more than normally sensitive do, at some point in life when you are turning into a teenager, we need some kind of explanation for what this is. You know, if you're about to go crazy or if it's something more to the world. So in my case, it was very much in this kind of very simple spectrum of this, that due to seeing things that, you know, this sensitivity, I wanted to understand more of the world. And I think as well, you know, interest in art and philosophy and all this comes along as on this as well as a other means for explanation to kind of feel some resonance and see, aha, okay, this artist, this thinker is kind of understanding the same, so yeah, not that crazy, and you move on. So for me, naturally, I was more interested in spirit phenomena, you know, ghosts and poltergeists and nature spirits and where this is coming from. I had an early interest in African and Afro-derived cults, but no, I'm more than 50 years old now, and when you're a teenager, you know, more than 30, almost 40 years ago, is the access was a bit limited before the internet. The internet really helped on gaining access. So I started with books, then went on to university in anthropology, studied there as well. And this opened doors to kind of start traveling and exploring the world more in terms of having a purpose, like so both academic purpose and a personal purpose in going to searching out like, you know, Cuba and Brazil, these things.
So the subtitle of your book is Quimbanda in Theory and Practice. For those of our listeners that aren't familiar with the term, could you give us a brief outline of what Quimbanda is,
where is it practiced and what sets it apart from other African diasporic religions?
Kimbanda is the name that we give to the cult of two spirits, Eshu and Pombaji. Very, very briefly summarized, right? I think with Kimbanda, it's very important to understand that Kimbanda is a Brazilian phenomenon. And like, for instance, voodoo in, you know, the Azawe voodoo, where you receive the soul, that was developed in the urban areas. You have the same thing with Kimbanda, right? So it takes up significant portions of the culture where it's kind of cultivated and evolved, right? So, because today we have this, so where is Kimbanda from and where is this through roots and all this? And I think it's a bit wrong question. I think Kimbanda is something that we have to understand as a living cult. It's very dynamic, very interactive, very pragmatic. And perhaps it is in this that people get lost quite often. You know, when you are looking for something that is not there, and am I doing it right? And all this with Kimbanda. But at the roots, you see, Kimbanda is kind of simple. So it's a cult focused upon Eshu and Kumbajira. And at the core of everything is the importance of making a connection, a true connection with your Eshu and your Kumbajira, right? So in Kimbanda, you can then have access on spirits that teaches, protects, and guides you through life. Very simple. This is at a kind of nucleus or core of Kimbanda.
So you just mentioned Esu and Pombagira. So do they have any Western analogs?
This thing with analogs and all this, of course they have. But you have to be careful with this, right? When we are making analogies and syncretisms, right? Very often is this uncritical association going on, right? That is, you know, the deity in this culture, he likes ravens, so does this deity in that culture. They are the same. No, they have some similar traits and preference for ravens, right? But yeah, absolutely, Eshu is, here in Brazil, is this, every week, every month, is this, you see all the social media and all this kind of Pai de Santos and so on. Eshu is not the devil. I would say Eshu is the devil, absolutely the devil. It's just that we don't really understand the devil, right? If you understand the devil on really Catholic premises, he do has a part in the big master plan of God, right? So, how should you understand the devil, right? He's kind of, is he friend or foe? Well, what is his function? You know, if you take away the this more moral strappings or more conform theology. So the devil tempts us in order for us to choose well, isn't it? I mean, bringing the Bible into this. So the Jesus is out there in the desert with the devil for 40 days, 40 nights, being tempted. So of course we can jump on this and say, yeah, that's who he is. He's a kind of that asshole. He said the devil is just tempting us. But should we, just because of this role in the world that he has in the biblical cosmogony, assume that he takes that this is his goal, that we should fall for his temptations? No. In this sense, Eshu has the same. It's kind of it's all this power and opportunity of fixing. Things are not within reason, of course. You know, magic is working with subtle energies. It's not miracles necessarily. So it's about ordeal, the crossroads, challenges, wisdom. These parts of the devil, you know, that is more kind of tricking us into being wise and choosing well. So this is one part. The other part is that Eshu also took on traits of the Yoruba Eshu. And the Yoruba issue, the Orisha, is a deity of the crossroads, and his function is to bring our prayers to Olodumare, to God.
Sort of like an intermediary?
Exactly. You know, I think, again, you know, the crossroad is to understand what the crossroad is, that is a place of convergence, a place of power, a place of meeting, a place of transmutation, transformation, is kind of, let's expand over mind a bit in understanding what a crossroad is, right? So when a spirit says that this is my domain, so it is basically saying that, you know, everything that goes in and out of the world, visible and invisible, I know this shit.
There are some culturally sensitive issues, of course, when we discussing Kwimbanda and Umbanda and other New World and African traditional religions being practiced in the West. So to what degree then do you think that Kwimbanda is a closed practice?
You know, I don't think Kwimbanda, when you say closed initiatic.
Like, can anybody just pick up a book on Kwimbanda, read it, and then suddenly begin practicing this specific branch of what would you call it? Would you say esoteric religion or sorcery, witchcraft? How would you define it?
Very good question, a complex one. And let's break this down in some parts here. Is it possible? It's possible. Right. But in this, I think it's, you know, looking back, me myself as well, for instance, with the voodoo in the past, and also with Kwimbanda, I had not much access. No, let's stay with Kwimbanda since it's the topic. So in my case, I was gifted a huge statue of a given from Majira. It intrigued me. My first encounter was kind of, wow, it's a demoness. Brazil are cultivating demonesses. That must be the best country in the world. to my luck, it was in English at the time, just to my luck, it actually existed. Some kind of manual, a book by Antonio Alves about Pombagira. So I actually started working with this material as best as I could. But okay, I had some foundation in Palo, in Voodoo, and so on before. So, you know, African faiths and tradition wasn't kind of something new and exotic to me at the time. So I used the techniques and modalities that I knew already as best as I could. And from this, you know, it's the path just opened towards Brazil, just through contacts and the university, and you understand? So I think if you are honest with a good heart doing this because you feel a rapport, or, you know, there's something here that you want to explore and you do your best. Okay, that's one thing. Another thing is, if you have access, I choose not to use this access that is opening up, you know, this kind of, you knock on the door, spirit opens, and you kind of, no, I don't want to travel, I don't want to do this, you know, it's costing money. Okay, so you want everything for no sacrifice. And I think that's a very bad attitude, really. Which brings me to the third thing, that I think is overall complicated with the spirit of modernity. You know, how especially we Westerners are feeling entitled all the time to whatever we want. Like we Westerners, we do feel very entitled. I want this. I can be everything I want to be. I want this. What I want, I can have. And just go for this. And then from this, we have all these kind of, you know, culture appropriation discussions and whatnot, right? Isn't it? Because even if Kwimbanda is at root a kind of simple cult, it has what we call fundament, you know, it has foundation. And some form of initiation is at some point necessary, right? even if, as I told, you know, the most essential thing in Kimbanda is your contact with your spirit, that, you know, your spirit guide, and you are in a true, real contact that is beneficial for you and the entity, right? Still, there are things, you know, secrets and powers that are passed on in an initiatic sense that kind of makes you a Kimbanda. I have no problem with people kind of doing the best they can if they are doing this, you know, authentic and, you know, not because they see here something that can benefit them in ways that, you know, make this fragile ego more big and awesome, or all this is, depends your approach really. Because this again, Kimbanda is a talk that.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Symbolism of the crossroads is very important because there's an openness there, an access for everyone. What is important, how you enter this crossroad in order to reap and gain benefits and so on. So it's good questions for everyone doing magic, interested in magic, is why are you doing magic? Yeah? For what?
So it's more of an exchange and an involvement within an ecology of spirits, not simply as transactional as getting paid and laid alone, but instead the focus is on the ongoing initiation and taking the time to be as involved within the practice as possible, perhaps even travel and move to a different country to become closer to it, to become part of it.
It depends on what level you want to go, right? Okay, for me, it's I'm a very skeptical person. You know, for me, spirit really has to bang the drums very loudly for me to kind of, it is really a sign. What, can you give me one more, please? You know, so I can be absolutely sure. So, because I am very careful with ego trips and so on. It's kind of, we all been there. We know how ugly and nasty this is, and what kind of detours and bad tracks in life it leads us to, you know? But Kimbanda, you know, is testing us, tempting us to kind of, Matt, yeah, paid late, and what after this? More money and more stuff. Because there's nothing wrong with this, right? I think money is good, I think sex is good, and issue thinks the same. So, hence, all this, the devil, right? So the spirits are kind of concerned with worldly matter. And I think it's very good. It's kind of, how can we be happy if our worldly life is suffering? You know, it's kind of, if you struggle with the money, with love, with friendships, with, you know, the shoe provides all of these kind of things, right? So this, how the material foundation well in our life is important. It's not important. For me, it's important, at least. If this is not in order, I get very stressed and I get less, get a bit distracted with my spirituality if the material things are not in a certain order, you know?
Yeah.
So well, they provide this, right?
But there's something more, if you were to say, if you wanted to get into Kimbanda, you have to make a sacrifice yourself. You have to really commit. It's not something that just anybody can just pick up a book and say, okay, now I'm practicing Kimbanda after, you know, an afternoon reading. And
no, it's a start, right? And it's if this is really, I think with everything that that you feel has a kind of attraction or resonance with you, is to go as far as possible with this, you know, is kind of dedicate some serious interest and time and energy into this, instead of treating it just like a hobby, you know. This I realized as well, and I think it's kind of important. I always like to travel, and you know, that reading about a country versus visiting that country is very different. Was it the same for you, Mats? Is kind of reading about Japan than living in Japan?
Oh yeah,
it's different. It's kind of, you can't compare it. Because you know, you read some account or you see some videos or films and all this, and it's kind of, oh wow, this is beautiful, exotic. My God, they are dancing and singing, and wow, spirits are coming. Wow, this is so wonderful. Still, is that a distant observer approach that is kind of don't manage to interact in the same way, you know? It's kind of so, you know, visit to the culture, you know, as you do as an anthropologist and a study, is kind of you're there trying to keep your bias in check, you know, okay, I'm sure what's also initiated and all this is it's a modality closer, right? You go to a place and say, okay, so there's some celebration, you get more of the culture, more of the this, but full immersion, you know, like, migrating and living in that country forever is, of course, it matures even your spirituality, right? So I think for me as a foreigner that actually relocated because of my issue in Pombagira, well, okay, I took them seriously. My experience with Kimbanda is, of course, then one of total immersion in into this cult and culture and atmosphere and land, which of course will be richer and deeper than some person somewhere reading a book and lighting a candle and trying to sing a ponto in the corner of his room.
You mention at the beginning of the book that discovering the true lineage of Kimbanda is essentially impossible. Is a direct line of teaching important to the tradition?
Lately, people is making it important lately, you know, because of this, well, in Ifa is important, in Palo is important, you know, it's kind of where you're coming from. And I think it's important, thing is important as well, it's kind of where are you coming from? It's like asking what kind of family you are from, so you have a better idea of what kind of creed, nature, works, you know, you have a better idea of who you are and, you know, your family, like. Like we take Ifa, for instance. So okay, well, what is her name? Well, it's kind of you're from what? It's kind of Agbafelele. Okay, what state there? Okay. So when I speak with the Babalaos, it's kind of they have an idea of what type of work I'm doing here, where I'm coming from, if I'm good or bad. It's kind of everything in the name, right? It's getting a bit like this in Brazil as well, but it's a new thing, really. Because as I told this, it was very difficult to really trace lines. I managed to do it in my own case. And also in the south of Brazil, it's possible because this is also an important thing. When you speak about Kimbanda, we are speaking about two types of Kimbanda. We are speaking, so I am dealing with this Kimbanda from the northeast, from the northeast, southeast of Brazil, right? That is kind of more from the states of Bahia, Rio de Janeiro, you know, this kind of these dispersed urban areas, right? But we also have a Kimbanda that grew up in the south of Brazil, the 1960s, through Maeda, that took a different shape. I think it's because of the time it flourished. In the 60s, it was a kind of greater openness, the beginning of Black Power movements and so on in Brazil. So she was told by her issue, Sergio Cruzeladas, that no, he wants religion. He wants everything open, so much that down there in Porto Alegre, where she lives, they have a whole city holiday dedicated to her issue. And her street, that's the name of her issue. So it's a kind of, when you see this, it's give me a sign, give me a sign if this is the real deal or not. Well, I guess so, right? So if you see in that case, it's very simple. Okay, it's Mayed, right? In our case, because here in Salvador, Rio de Janeiro, and all this, it was very, very complicated to call yourself Kimberley. You went to jail in the 30s, 40s, all this, right?
That serious?
It was very serious. You know, these years in Brazilian history, from the abolishment of slavery, 1888, until the 1960s, was this dance between conservatism, and we had the Tropicália, and we had the, you know, samba, and it's the government was kind of stimulating Brazilian identity and culture in one end, and wanted to control the costumes and cults and religions in the other. So if your practice was remotely related to Jesus, less problems, like Umbanda, right? So Umbanda was sort of giving birth in 1908, right? But it was native spirits and caboclos, Peto Velhos, and everything in the name of Jesus Christ that later became Oshallah, and you know, they maintained this not because of any attempt or masquerading. This is another history, but I think the very Celio that was receiving the message of creating Umbanda, he was also told to do it in this way because it would kind of safeguard the cult and ensure its propagation, right? So this thing with lineage and Kimbanda, it became very difficult because no one spoke about this. It's kind of, Kimbanda was simply just working with the nasty spirits that for material gains, right? And then you had, with Umbanda, you had this kind of, Kimbanda is a part of Umbanda, but it's the evil part, you know, that is kind of good. Umbandistas, they don't deal with this. It's just bad people. Many lineages as such, kind of got lost the memory of where it came from, right? But luckily, in my own case, it's, I know where I'm coming from, you know, with the history fits and how they safeguarded fits, you know, and it's kind of so it all came from Joãozinho, the Gomeia in the end through Ake. I see, you know, when you're speaking with your by the sound, and came from there, really. But he was against Macumba and Kimbanda. He spoke bad about it. Yes, because if he spoke good about it, he would go to jail. So it was this kind of, so Umbanda, Kimbanda was kind of like Abel and Cain, the two brothers, two sisters growing up together, and police was after one and supporting the other.
So, given the history of slavery and Kimbanda's relationship with the devil, would you say it's a tradition of rebellion?
I think it's a difficult question. It's I'm a bit on the fence with this in general, with how political should we actually be, you know?
It seems that there's a significant amount of the tradition comes from what you were just explaining about the way that the oppression that people were experiencing in that period of history. And so this seems like an interesting expression or adaptation of native religion with diasporic African religion, Christianity. To what point is this revolution, like fighting against the man sort of attitude, is that inherent in Kimbanda?
No, I think that more rebellious spirit is a part of Kimbanda, really. Sure, in the past, when the slaves run away and making their quilombos, they're kind of safe houses and all this in the jungle and cultivate their stuff, increasing their magical arsenal to use against the colonizers and so on. Sure. This energy is still there in Kimbanda, but to what extent is this, you know, what is the translation to that? I mean, I think, if I look at myself, it's kind of, I've always gravitated towards counterculture my whole life. Still, I also like to have some order in my life, you know, it's kind of education and, you know, income and all this, right? Still my political leaning, well, I was always very conservative, but at heart I'm an anarchist, you understand? It's kind of, I think we are, really. So I think, but not the chaos anarchy, a green anarchy, you know, it's kind of, the laws of nature is higher than the laws of men, and it's kind of, you know, all this angle. But with this comes, of course, a kind of a rebellion against order that is imposed upon you, that you were never a part of choosing, right? Isn't it? So I think it's more in this realm that we have rebellion today. And I do believe that if you create a good relationship with your issue and Pombagira as tutelary spirits that teaches you, they will help us to be more authentic. And I think the more authentic we become, the more resistance we do towards things that is challenging our authenticity, right? So I think the rebellion translated to modern times and modern needs is more about this, you know, because I don't know, the difficult with a political agenda as it was in the past, because the I don't think we can say that the suppression of the Congress of the world is the same as back then. Well, it's still about money and power, as always, to a certain extent, isn't it? And influence and all this. But since the rulers of the world decided that to...
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
It was the dystopia of Huxley's Brave New World instead of Orwell. So it's about kind of consume, and the rules of the world is happy, and they don't create much problems.
So could you describe something of fundamento and its meaning?
Yes. Fundamento is the secret of Kimbanda, right? It's what makes it work. So when we say that it's kind of, this guy, he doesn't have fundamento. This is vernacular. He doesn't have fundamento. This guy is a charlatan. So picareta, as they say, you know. No, we have the same thing in Cuba as well. It's kind of the prenda, you know, the keys is called fundamento, but so is the person that possesses knowledge, and it's kind of, it's the same thing. So fundamento means both seekers of the cult, right? Means knowing what you come from. It means that you have a true connection with your spirit. It means that you know what you are doing, basically. It's that composition that means fundamento in terms of Kimbanda, right? You know who you are, where you're coming from. Your connection with spirit is true and good, and you know what you're doing, and you know how to do things.
I'm going to quote from your book where you quote Frater Aka, and I think this is a pretty interesting quote. He says, the primal sorcery of the first Goetes to establish and maintain boundaries between the realm of the dead and the living, to uphold the threshold between the chthonic and the human world. Equally, they were the forces through which human priests would also cross these thresholds and interact with the forces and beings from the other side. The Idean dactyls, all in one, represented the door, the key, and the threshold, as well as the guardians who watched over it. To this point, what degree do our ancestors play a role within the tradition of Kumbanda? And would you describe Kumbanda itself as a necromantic or a goetic practice?
Yeah, necromantic, yes, because you're working with the dead, right? I would say, because, well, I know very well the this kind of neo-goetic movement in since Jake and so on, that Akin is sort of continuing. So, yes, I think it's a very good fit, right? And if you you see, like, in my book from 2012 issue on Scarlet Imprint, a lot of these issues have names of spirits or demons from Grimoire Yombele, right? Because, you know, in the beginning, back there in the 40s, 50s in Brazil, when these Kimbandeiros, that were not Kimbandeiros, but Umbandistas, try to catalog spirits and find some sense, kind of. So you're working with a shoe like this and that, and putting everything nice in lines and making sense of this, and it's kind of, and it was all this French connection. Look at this, what you say, it reminds what I read in that book. What is that? Is Grimoire Yombele. Okay, let's see if there's more, right? So already back then, they saw a kind of resonance. That's hearing their feet and hearing their not. So with Goetia and demons of the West and all this, I more inclined to largely see these, you know, issue and the space of Verum as cousins, you know. They understand one another. It's a kind of, it's a familiarity there, but again, this direct association saying that issue this is the same as demon, that's not that simple. And I think maybe once upon a time it was, right? But I think if you take, it's the same as migrating, isn't it? So the same spirit cultivated in a different culture over several centuries, you know, it will not be the same, you know? It will have traits, it will be at core, be the same, but it will express itself in accordance to different needs. And the culture that grew up around and all this. So that's with the poetic part. With ancestors, yes, because I think that ancestors and spirits, you know, live together. Okay, I'll use a concept from Ifá to illustrate how I think about this that also fits with the Kimban. It's just that so in Ifá, we have the concept of Egbe. Egbe is represented by twins, right? You have seen the statues of twins, female and a male, wooden statue that is tied together. This spiritual concept represents our community of spirits and ancestors in the invisible world. So in the cosmovision of Ifá, we are living here on Earth in a mirror reality, you know, where, kind of invisible Matt is having a human experience for some time. Then you go back there in to the invisible realm to hang out with your true family. And this family, this Egbe, is your ancestors and your spirits, meaning, is kind of, if you were initiated into Kimbanda or in Voodoo or whatever initiated tradition, living tradition, this Lua, this Orisha, this the Kabok, whatever, they are in that same realm, right? It's kind of interesting that, you know, in the other side, is if you call it Kimbanda or Voodoo, this is, doesn't matter, it's kind of your spiritual ontology lives there and you're a part of this. I see the same with the Kimbanda, you know, in a kind of our ancestors, right? They, what we do here that kind of stirs with the invisible world, with the spiritual matters, will naturally do things with ancestors, given that we have contact with our ancestors, right? Because in the West, unfortunately, a simple practice as kind of having a little table in a corner where you offer some coffee and candle and water to your ancestors, people don't do anymore. So if we started doing something simple as this, starting to connect again, yes, we would have our ancestors on board in the other side with our spirit guides. So that's how I think about this, about with the this thing with the afterlife and ancestors and so on in Kimbanda. Man, it's 20 plus years of every time I had the opportunity of speaking with some different Asians, so how is the afterlife then? Oh man, it's kind of, it's a lot of work and blah blah blah. I tell a lot, tell a lot. But in the end, it's kind of your, it seems that I'm not more wiser even listening to this right now. It's kind of, it's the same, but different. And you will not understand, because you are not there yet. You need to be there to understand. It's kind of the, okay.
So my next question was going to be, could you describe something of the eschatology of Kimbanda?
I think we should understand it more like realms, you know, coexisting, isn't it? Because for me, after more than two decades living with my issue, is he's always with me. It's kind of, it's just about tuning in, really, all the time. So with this, my experience is that it's more like the realms and fields, you know, it's more quantum mechanics, how it really works in a way, you know, and frequencies and vibrations than these kind of levels.
So you mentioned in several places in the book that the spirits that are being worked with in Kimbanda are hostile and potentially even dangerous, which makes you think a lot about like Western grimoiric practices where the spirits are also considered hot or dangerous. So you need specific items like the ring or a triangle, for instance, to contain them or to deal with them in a simpler way or in a manageable way. And also you mentioned the Grimoire Inverum, which relies very much so on the pact and forging a pact with a spirit. Does Kimbanda approach communication with the Esu in the same manner?
Yeah, look, these kind of warnings are really warranted because since the Esus and the Pumbajiras, you know, they are spirits that are coming from all walks of life. And, you know, the vernacular we are using here is the Pobdahua, that these are the people of the streets. These are the kind of the marginals and the criminals and the, you know, unholy saints, you want, right? And of course, in this realm where you kind of you can have you know, murderous pimps, whores, you know, all that dark side of society, you find in Kimbanda. It's not as a meaning. Oh, so I can just be a murdering pimp and steal from everyone. No, it's not this. You know, is that an issue that has a history? Let's say he was a ruthless and horrible tyrant in his life, became an issue, right? And what I see is that always when the issue start to speak about histories when they were alive that made them issue, is with this kind of, don't do the fucking same mistake I did. Okay, I know there's a better way and I can teach you this now, right? Ah, this means that these warnings are kind of the first time, because issues are legions, right? It's kind of when you're calling, let's say, Shumur Segu, a bad issue, not one, you know, it's a legion, it's a collective of dead souls that is resonating with that bigger idea of Shumur Segu that joins this collective shield. And from all these souls of Shimur Sego, one of them feels specially attracted to you and is kind of, I think I can work with Matt, right? So he has this unique story. And in the beginning, if this story of this spirit is sad, violent, and the first times that he's kind of trying to calm down, it can be complicated for the medium and for the spirit to find this balance. And also, so you want to work with an issue that you know has a sinister reputation, but that soul or that sinister issue that is kind of feeling a resonance with you, that is coming to help you, is getting pissed with you, asking about things that is going against what you should know better, not to do. Right.
Ah, so they're teaching you to be a better person and not make the same mistakes.
I think human analogies are very functioning very well with Kimbanda, because after all, it's people, you know, it's just that they're dead, most of it, right? So it's just to think that, so when you are there approaching a spirit, right, and you have a request, it's kind of, oh my God, I really want this issue to murder that person over there. And I know that issue, this and that, so you can do this for me. Knock, knock. Hey, dude, can you kill that fucking idiot over there? Kind of, who are you? Why? How much you pay? And again, who are you and why?
Yeah, dangerous. If you were doing that with a human, that would be very dangerous, doing it with a spirit.
Well, your understanding is kind of, it's not that it's a kind of 100% fit, but I think it helps to understand how to deal with these spirits, because in the end of the day, they are people.
So my next question then is, we mentioned previously already several times the Grimorium Verum, and when I was reading your book, I read, and I was quite surprised at just the similarity of the hierarchical structure embedded that you were describing, specifically as well that the Trinity at the top of this hierarchy is a very familiar Lucifer, Beelzebuth, and Astaroth.
Yeah.
Could you describe something of that, the Trinity's function in Kimbanda?
Yeah, with this we are kind of touching what we call fundamental, right? So there are things with this Trinity that is really a deep secret that every Kimbandero should know about, right? Because what I'm seeing, what I think is very funny with this, because when I came across this, it's kind of, so is African or is European? I don't quite only get this, you know, like, why is Trinity in? But these are really just basically code names, right? For us to understand what is going
on. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Going on, you know, there are real issue names behind all of these names.
I see.
Let's say it's kind of, it's related to Monsieur de Mayoral, right? And how the Mayoral, in a way, brings fire from darkness, right? So these are modalities of mystic sorcerer's fire that moves Kimbanda. So it's a trinity, not, I think we should be careful with this kind of, the trinity is Christian and so on. No, it's all this Trinitarian philosophy in Christianity, they took from elder philosophies that, you know, Pythagoras and whatnot, that realized the beauty of the point, you know, the mother and the father, and then the child, you know, it's kind of, it's just a beautiful and true celestial an infernal harmony, right? So the rules.
So to what extent then does possession play a role in Kimbanda? And can you give some information to our audience to help remove the stigma associated with these sort of practices that's been created by Hollywood?
Ah, yes. Okay, first, with living cults, like Kimbanda, possession is essential. It's absolutely necessary. But when we Westerners think about possession, we think about full-fledged possession, where kind of there is nobody home and spirit is taking over everything. And it's not really like this. It's kind of, as we are training on the mediumship, right? We realize that there are several modalities of possession, right? So from hearing, feeling, to have the spirit as an encosto, as we say, on your shoulders, a term that can be used both negative and positive, but it's kind of that the spirit is, you know, you physically feel it's there, you know. So you the spirit speaks with you all the time. So it's not you, but your conscience is intact, but you are kind of called two heads, right? Dreams, clairvoyance, visions, all these are facets of possession, right? All go in full possession, right? Is the, I think we are misunderstanding possession as much as we misunderstanding our word like ecstasy. What ecstasy means? Yeah, we have the ecstasy of sex, the ecstasy of pleasure, but it's also the ecstasy of Teresa d'Avila, which is divine revelation. And divine revelation is apocalypse. You know, it's kind of this, you know, yeah. Possession is as simple, as difficult to understand as ecstasy. It's kind of taken for granted, our possession is like this. No, no, it's, there are modalities here, right?
So it's a spectrum.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that for me, it's, this stage now, with kind of that I'm chronically walking with my issue, is kind of as a toy. It's just this kind of tuning in to your body that is always walking with. Nowadays, after many, many years of possession, I prefer this, the full possession, because people react differently on this. Some people, you know, get possessed, it depends on the spirit as well. Some people feel reinvigorated and good after, and other people feel tired. I am the last category. It's kind of depending on what issue. I'm fatigued for 2-3 days, and it's kind of, it takes really a lot, you know. And even if you do as it kind of, you complete the spirit, it's kind of, oh, you come and then you leave, and I'm kind of foggy for 2 days. So what I can do, I'll do like this. You do, it helps, but still, you know. So this is about personal limitations.
Really interesting to think about possession in that way, just because of the damage that Western media has sort of done again, you know, against the, you know, everybody has this idea of what possession is, and we, you know, you've seen videos or something, but you know, the reality of it is something completely, completely different.
Yeah, no, but this I remember is the first times had a lot of fear and resistance because of the same thing. Yeah, and my fear was okay, so because when you are in these cultures and you're in ceremonies and all these kind of, and you're a sensitive person, and so it's, you feel that they want to take you over, right? So my fears in the beginning was, and what if I don't come back, you know? If I stay, you know, in kind of spirit land forever, you know, like a demonic possession, our the exorcist is kind of bye-bye. You took your body, don't come back. But this is really not a reality. It's kind of, thinking about it, I brought this kind of movie fears to the table.
Okay, so I'm really interested as well in learning a little bit about the astrological connections of the spirits and the ancestors specifically, and how their relationship with the stars and the planets intersect with our experience and our practice. To what degree does Kimbanda engage with the stars or with astrology, the planets, the zodiac, things like that? Or the fixed stars? Is there a significant component of that in Kimbanda?
No, unfortunately not. The more important thing is the moon, the lunar cycles, right? Full moon, new moon. But there is not a kind of a fundamento of astrological wisdom in Kimbanda as such. No, this is more kind of things that we need to bring into the equation because of common interest between practitioner and spirit. So it becomes more of a kind of particular, unique knowledge, right? There has, of course, in the history of literature on Banda and Kimbanda, it exists, right? But it's kind of, so for me, reading a book about astrological correspondences that is very kind of modern and Jungian, related to orishas and issues and so on, is kind of, it doesn't speak with me because I'm a traditional astrologer and I think this is it's not my cup of tea, right? And it's, these things will then become more a part of taxonomy of the astrological symbols and meanings that that works for you to understand what you're doing better.
And you mentioned the term Malandragem. Am I pronouncing that correctly? You mentioned this term in your book in relation to Kimbanda. Could you describe what this means and why is it an important aspect of the practice?
Yeah. You know, Malandragem is really, a malandro is a husband, right? Street smart person. Kimbanda, when it took shape, you know, in the 20s, 30s, you know, it was already there, but it's kind of, Malandragem was an important component in, especially in Hill, that had a big culture of Malandragem. You know, Sepplintra, this issue that is dressed in white suit and top hat, you know, it's kind of a gentleman or an issue, is incarnating this idea of Malandragem. It's a kind of, if he sees an advantage that is not hurtful to anyone, he will take it, you know? So, in the past, this kind of the malandro, the Sepelinta type of hustler, was more an example of. So even if you're, even if life didn't give you everything you wanted, you know, you still need to kind of see where you can take an advantage in life, you know, to make life better. This is one side, and you know, it's also this kind of side of taking care of people that are in bad situations, right? In a country like Brazil that is suffering from poverty, still is, you know, for so long time. This as well, you know, this kind of a little bit of Robin Hood, we used to having this idea of the malandro as well, you know, the little man against the oligarchs, and you know.
Yeah. That's why I brought up like the idea of revolution in that before. I think it was something that was, it seems to be a theme or the spirit of the practice.
No, it's in the sense, you know, the malandro, the people of the street, all this is, even if Kimbanda is a necromantic cult, it's a big celebration of life, you know? They are coming down in possession of all this. It's kind of, oh, give me a drink, give me tobacco, let's talk, you know. It's this kind of enjoying life, you know.
Yeah, very affirming, life-affirming, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. That's really interesting. All right, well, Nikolai, thank you. I guess my last question really for you is, what is your hope for this book? What do you want to accomplish with this?
Two things, really. I wanted to give a very clear presentation, you know, short, clear, clean, cut to the chase with the chance of as little understanding as possible for what Kimbanda is. Part two, to make a synthesis, you know, a simple presentation of Kimbanda that is a kind of, this is a fundamental that all Kimbanderos can agree on. And so far, yes, right. So that was aspiration, and it seems I managed to accomplish this. It's a kind of, because going back to what you asked in the very early on with, so a person reads a book and start practicing. Is that okay to do? I also took that into consideration, right? So it's a kind of, there are rituals here, there are procedures and so on that is kind of, and everything safe and okay, and okay to experiment with, you know? So I have nothing against people experimenting and saying it's kind of testing out what is this and so on. It's kind of like with the material here in this book. But if you feel the calling, get serious.
Well, thank you so much, Nikolai. It's been a real pleasure talking to you today. Before you go, is there anything more that you would like to add? Is there anything that you're working on right now? Any upcoming projects, any other books? And where can people find you if they're interested in finding more from you?
Yes, I'm actually currently working on two projects. A book about that is called Macumba, that is about the varieties of Brazilian spirituality. So that one is slated for 2025. One book about traditional witchcraft, and I guess that's it. Actually, it's kind of, I have some smaller projects that I spoke with the Hadian to make that I will do, but for now that's it. So my books, you know, Hadian, Scarlet Imprint, Troy Books, Medical Oxford, and yes. And for contact, I have also the online store. Yeah, I always forget about this, but it's important. Called Sacred Alchemy Store. Okay, so we're offering consoles and products and services and so related to African and natural diasporic cults.
All right, well, thank you very much, Nikolai, for coming on and talking to us today.
Yeah, my pleasure, really. Thank you.
That was Nikolai de Matos Frisvold discussing his recently published book, Seven Crossroads of Night, Quimbanda in Theory and Practice. I was very much outside my own sphere of expertise during this conversation, and I feel that I learned a great deal from Nikolai. There were many points he brought up which really captured my attention and sparked a great deal of interest. In a recent conversation I had with Dr. Alexander Cummings, he suggested that we approach the African diasporic religions and learn from them as our cousins. They do, after all, have an unbroken living tradition. I really enjoyed the topic of the journey and the voyage the spirits have made from Africa to the New World, as well as the evolutions and syncretisms which have marked the development of Quimbanda. I think it is reflected in the commitment some of us have made to traveling to distant places to learn from other cultures and practices. While we may be far from our homes, we integrate and we adapt to become something new. I also agree wholeheartedly that many Westerners lack some of the simplest connections with their ancestors, and that doing something as basic as setting up a small table with an offering of coffee, water, and a candle is all that is needed to connect us to something far larger. I was particularly interested in the way in which Nikolai described the different modalities of possession states. This has given me a lot to think about, given my own experiences with the spirits and how I have interpreted those events. And finally, I think this really cannot be said loud enough. Necromancy is first and foremost a celebration of life. And I think the sooner the negative connotations which have accreted onto this practice are themselves laid to rest, the sooner our own traditions in the West can begin to take on an independent life of their own. For those interested in learning more about Nikolai's work, links can be found in the description below, which will take you to his other published books by both Hadian Press and Scarlet Imprint. as well as to his own website where he provides magical services. Please subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already. Like our videos, comment and share if you can. We now have over 900 subscribers. We are so close to hitting our goal of 1,000 by the end of the year. So please, please, please share our videos with your friends and especially with anyone that would be interested in the subject of magic, divination and occult philosophy. It would mean the absolute world to everyone at Hadean Press and would really help us and our authors get their words out into the world. We have some very interesting guests already lined up for next year, and I'm very excited to have them on the show to discuss some of the most cutting-edge practices from across a great spectrum of esoteric traditions. This will be our final podcast of the year, so I will sign off by wishing you all a very happy holiday and all of the best for 2024 and all of the potential that it holds. And I look forward to seeing you all again in the next one.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.